This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Rach.
Lady.
This is
a real documentary. It's like the cream of the crop.
The creme of the crumbs.
The creme.
No,
I don't think that's right. It sounds weird. I don't like that. That sounds like you've had too much dairy.
Somehow we get sidetracked in sex parties that has nothing to do with...
It has nothing to do with it.
But we do a deep dive.
But I'm sure Michael J. Fox was probably invited to something like that at some point in his career.
Yes.
We don't touch on it at all in the documentary, full disclosure.
But Michael, if you're listening, please call in.
Please call in. Please call in. Even though we don't have a call-in line.
We don't have a phone.
But if you want to call in to us, Michael, we will get one.
Slide into our DMs.
Slide into our DMs, because I know Michael J. Fox is just dying into our DMs.
Cannot wait to DM us.
But it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. Please watch it.
Yes, let's
please
get
listen
right to
it. Us. Oof, it's so good. Here we go.
Okay, here we go. Ladies and jerks, welcome to Still Michael J. Fox. Hello, Rachael.
Oh, hello, Cheryl Ruth Hines.
I mean, there's a lot happening.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot happening in the world.
In the world. Yes.
But we're going to remind everybody that this is a comedy podcast.
This is a comedy podcast.
And regardless of the world falling apart around us, we are going to just take an hour or so to just lighten the load.
Just give us a brief breath.
Although this documentary is also, it's a...
I think it's very life-affirming.
Yes, life-affirming. I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? What's happening? Anything happening that we should know about?
I'm good. Well, you know, I can say that this weekend I'm going to a fan conference in Chicago where I get to meet a lot of fans of things that I've worked on in the past.
No, things that can't mention.
That we can't mention.
And what happens at those fan conferences? What are they? Are people dressed up and they come up and get their picture with you? And
yeah. Well, there's a lot of key parties. And a lot.
You mean a key party where everybody puts their keys in a bowl and then whoever you pick, that's who you go home with?
Yeah.
That's usually it.
Like, pretty much, you know, like in the morning you'll meet and you have coffee and donuts and then you might talk about things that you've worked on in the past. And then pretty soon after that, you're dumping your keys in a big bowl.
Mm-hmm. By the way, do people even do that? Do people really do that?
I don't know.
Can I tell you something? This is total gossip.
I wish you would.
Okay, this is total gossip.
Okay, tell me.
But I heard, this was a long time ago, I heard that there was like a party like that in Malibu where people were sort of anonymous, but like sexy key party.
Okay, can I just tell you
that
I know for a fact I've done a podcast
with somebody who was there.
Not even. Can I just tell you?
Yeah.
You sound exactly like Kat when she was three, and she'd be like, it's heavy.
When she would have to hold something. Yeah.
It's heavy. But let me just tell you, I was on a podcast with someone
Okay. You don't want to mention their name.
Oh, I can mention it. Okay. It was on Bad Dates.
Okay.
Rob Cohen's podcast.
Okay.
It's so funny. It's called Bad Dates, and you guys should check that out for sure. But on it, the episode that I'm on, I can't remember the name of the guy that I'm on the show with, but he's very funny and he's a stand-up. And he actively goes to, he talked about it in the podcast. He actively goes to sex parties.
Sex parties. How do you even get invited to a sex party?
Well, I think you have to look for it, like in your neighborhood is what he said. Because I was fascinated by it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, and you go to a house.
Yeah.
And like, you can walk in and obviously, first things first.
You walk into a house.
You walk in the door. Okay. Right. You walk into the house.
But then you must have to have a code word or something.
I pretty much think if you're walking in there,
you know.
You've been invited.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. You walk into a house.
But maybe there's like a special thing. You know, you right. can't just have like.
Like a special handshake. Yeah. And we're like, oh, you didn't put your pinky out. You're not allowed in.
Ew. Ew.
Okay, go ahead.
It'd be like, where's that hand been? Okay, so you go in and then you can go into different rooms.
Okay.
Like different themes.
Oh.
And some people
are
engaging.
Yes.
In sexual activities.
Of course.
And some people are just standing back watching.
So, okay.
And then you can be approached and you can say, hey, you want to get down or whatever. And somebody might say, that was so gross. I'm going to regret saying that.
Hey, do you want to get down?
Especially the way that
you
said
really
it.
You really belong at a sex party. Hey, would you like to get down, sir?
Hey, would you like to get down? No, but it was so weird because he seemed like just
matter
normal
of fact.
Guy.
Ah, just
and,
like.
And he and his girlfriend.
Yeah, do it.
Like to go to these sex parties together.
Did he say what he does there? Is he a watcher or is he a doer?
I think he participates in all things.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Is what he said. I don't want to speak for him, but no. I believe that he was like, you know, I would do, you know, stuff. Sometimes you watch or whatever. He was very open.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, you know, people that go to these parties must be open because.
I mean, Cheryl, I think you would do so well
at a
sex party. I would
be so comfortable. I would really feel at home there.
Well, I mean, that's truly, it'd be like your worst nightmare. It's like a never nude at a sex party.
That would be a tough one. Where it's like, I'm just going to stand here in my cloak. And
I don't even think you could go in. I think you'd walk in and then you'd be like.
Well, I will say this. One time when I lived.
Here we go. R-rated.
R-rated.
I'm so excited.
Rachel,
here we go. We're getting
R-rated.
Her back up to it. No, I'm trying to get you to be R-rated. Oh, we know this.
Okay.
Okay.
Back in my younger days, when I lived in West Hollywood. Hollywood. It really came out Hollywood, and I hate it when people say that. But I lived in West Hollywood and I went to this bar and. Somebody said, oh, you have to walk into the back room. And I said, okay, I'll walk into the back room. What do I care? And I walked back there and it was like the spanking room. Like there was.
Wait, a spanking room? Like where people bare bottomed?
Yes. And so people were spanking other people. And the craziest part is that I met a cute attorney there. A cute straight attorney.
Was it predominantly a gay spanking party?
I didn't get that vibe, but
okay.
But also, I was in that community so much that I didn't really.
Was this like Paul and Eddie days? Like
yes.
Way back?
Yes. Yeah, it was probably predominantly gay, which made it even more extraordinary that I was there and I met like the one straight guy, although he told me he was straight. But now that I'm saying this story, what are the odds that he was straight at the gay bar watching
good.
Spanking?
Yeah, I don't think they're good. I think Cheryl, I think
now that
I think
I'm
this
really...
falls under. I love right now that you're having that aha right this moment.
Maybe he wasn't, but he was real cute. We did go out, but it didn't stick.
Really? No pun intended.
If you will. But he did. He was cute. And he said, I remember him saying, I'm going to pick you up, but wear comfortable shoes because my car doesn't always start. And we might have to push it to get
it
to start.
That's hot.
And I said, oh, is that a joke? And he said, no, it's not. I was like, no, right? What kind of attorney are you? Anyway, it was not.
I think this guy was just full of shit the entire time. Because honestly, like, I'm at a spanking party in West Hollywood, and you happen to meet the one straight man there.
Straight guy.
And then when he tells you he's going to pick you up, he's an attorney. And he says, I'm going to pick you up. But by the way, wear comfortable shoes because sometimes my car doesn't start.
Yeah. And you have to.
And you have to push it.
Push it until it's.
To get it going.
To get it going and then jump in the car.
That sounds like some redneck stuff that we did in Ohio with like every car.
Yeah, it doesn't usually happen in Los Angeles. You know what I mean?
No.
Not a lot of people are like pushing their car to get it going.
Which tells me that he probably.
Yeah, no. I guess if you meet somebody in a back room spanking room.
Uh-huh.
They probably think, oh, okay, if I go out with this person, certain things are going to happen.
Right. We're going to do more with spanking.
And by the way, now it's very clear to me why this didn't really take off. Because I thought, cool, I met a straight attorney.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a fun story to tell our kids. How did we get on sex parties?
Because we said, what happened? Podcasts. I brought up that guy at a sex party.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Well, what was the first thing that you told me?
I couldn't tell you. You came up. I can't even tell you how this started. And this documentary has nothing to do.
Absolutely nothing to do. We don't need to waste any more time.
No. Rachel, let's get right to it.
Because you and I are both never going to go to a sex party. End of story.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
I don't think that. But I would. I'm fascinated.
Well, we're fascinated. Maybe we can find a documentary on sex parties.
That where you can stand. Okay, Thomas, you've got some marching orders.
Yeah. Guess who's here? Frank, the guy, the attorney that you met at the spanking party.
Hey, Frank, come on out.
20 years ago. Frank, come on out.
Oh, what is he doing these days? I would love to know.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel?
Yes?
Today?
Yes.
We are talking about still a Michael J. Fox movie. It's a 2023 documentary film directed by Davis Guggenheim, whose previous credits include An Inconvenient Truth and Waiting for Superman. I mean, Davis is no joke.
I mean, I just wish that he was accomplished.
It chronicles the life and career of actor and activist Michael J. Fox, including his rise to stardom through roles in Family Ties and Back to the Future, as well as his diagnosis with Parkinson's. The film premiered at Sundance and is available to watch on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine being in Sundance watching this.
I can't. Cheryl, I told you, I texted you last night.
Yeah, no, I texted you first. I texted you first.
I know, you did. You texted me first and you said, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And you said it's intense.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to watch it after the boys go to sleep. And then I turned it on and I thought, I'm just going to get it ready so that once I wash my face and I get ready for bed, I turned it on and I sat in the same position for an entire, 1 hour, 40 minutes. And I didn't move. Nope. I didn't move. I didn't get up to do anything. I didn't go to the bath. I didn't drink any water. I just was like.
You didn't want to miss
this
one
was such a,
second.
No, it was such a. I mean, just the subject matter and then the way that it was shot, everything. Oh,
everything. And Rachel.
It was perfect.
We need to play the clip of the very first word that's said in this documentary. Okay. Stand by. Get ready. Because this makes total sense.
Yep.
Florida, 1990.
Boom.
Done. Anything that starts with Florida. Rachel. They're speaking our language.
I know.
Did I tell you that all documentaries somehow have a Florida connection? I don't know why.
Yes, we did. We've talked about it. And it's the first word out
of the gate.
The gate. And it's Florida. Yeah.
And I was not expecting. You could have knocked me over with a feather.
Also, I looked at that building and at first my first thought was Florida. And then I thought, is that where he lives?
I know. That's what I thought.
You know, I was confused. And then I realized, oh no, this is a scene in a film. And then I was like, oh, this is the convention that they're going to use. They're going to keep going back and forth between his real life
and footage
and then acting out what's happened in his life with scenes. It was amazing.
It was kind of meta, right? Because they're telling this story and he's done so much work and so many films and so many TV shows that Davis, the filmmaker, was just like taking all of those moments And so the whole film, the production of the whole film was just outstanding, right? Because you're starting, because they would, he would go in and out of clips of really well-made films and shows. And then go back to Michael J. Fox. And then that was also equally as riveting and beautiful. And oh, man, it was.
It was everything. I just kept thinking, I mean, we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
But we're just talking about it as a whole.
Yeah.
Have, you know what I mean? But it's just like, holy, you forget that there were three channels back then.
You know.
You had ABC, CBS, and NBC, and everybody was watching Family Ties.
Did you love Michael J. Fox? Oh, my God. Oh. I was like, yes, I think everyone. I'm going to marry that guy for sure.
Yes. You wanted to marry Alex P. Keaton. Isn't that amazing that he also, the first time he was on stage when they were filming his the first scene of the pilot, that he improvised. His line was supposed to be, yes, this is Alex Keaton. And he said he improvised the P. Right. So he said, hello, this is Alex P. Keaton. And he got his first big laugh and he was like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah. That was
because they weren't
great.
Sure. They Brandon Tartikoff was like, this guy isn't going to be on the side of a lunchbox. I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm very excited.
You really are. You really are. Oh,
Rachel. Oh, come on. Thomas. I know.
Thomas. He's telling us we have to take a break. This is ridiculous.
Oh, my gosh.
Rachel, this is ridiculous. I mean, why did we spend time on the sex club?
I don't know. We can cut the sex stuff down.
He won't. This is the problem
sex
with Thomas.
Stuff
he's not going to cut it. This is the problem.
I love it. I love it. He's shaking his head like, nope.
No. Okay.
Okay.
We are going to take a break and we're going to come back and really dive into Michael J. Fox.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Okay, so in 1990, Michael J. Fox woke up with a quote, ferocious hangover, with a quote-unquote. He thought he was having a ferocious hangover. And the night before, he'd party with his buddy, Woody Harrelson, who I love and adore.
I know.
I've worked with Woody several times. I just had to throw that in. To
name
just...
dropping it. We know you're famous.
I'm famous and I have famous friends. But he noticed that his pinky finger was trembling uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And he'd later come to understand that the trembling was a message from the future.
Yeah. Back to the future. It's like he knew. It was like a premonition where he was like, this is something's deadly wrong.
Because he couldn't control what was happening with his finger, and he felt like it wasn't connected to his body. He knew something was wrong. And his career was on fire at this point.
Yeah.
But he was really scared. And and it's interesting because this documentary goes back and forth.
Back and forth.
To today, Michael J. Fox of today, and how he's getting through life and, you know, what his day looks like. And then we'll go back and walk you through, like, the chronological order of how things unfolded.
Yeah.
Ooh, girl.
And it was crazy going back and looking at how he grew up in Alberta, Canada. What I love is that they talked about how little he was.
I know.
And as a woman, you really, like, I'm short.
Yes.
And yet, but as a guy, how much that affected him.
That's gotta be
hard. And they kept
showing
all those pictures of him
in school
standing next to people that are the same age of him, but he looks like he's 5 years younger than everybody.
he was
and so,
so
it kind of
small.
Yeah, it kind of gave him something to have to work through and to overcome.
Yeah.
Yes, to overcome.
Yeah.
And he said that the drama club, I loved the line where he said, I got to be anything in the drama club.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't have to be short. He's like, did it make you feel 10 feet tall?
Yeah.
I think the guy that was, and he said, oh, it made me feel like I could do anything.
Yes. And then Davis, the filmmaker, said, oh, did you play Rumpelstiltskin in the play? And he said, yes. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he says he was a cute elf.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And he was all excited because he got to be with all the girls.
Yeah.
He's like, that's where all the girls were.
Yeah. So he really found his place. But what was, I just thought it was so interesting. There were so many things I didn't know about him. But Michael was not a great student. He struggled in class.
C's,
he had
D's.
Bad grades. He started smoking and drinking. And when he said he was a serial fender bender and then showed pictures of the cars, it's like, those were not fender benders.
Those were serious accidents. I'm like, were those actually his
That's what I was wondering,
or was it
too.
Stock footage?
Well, this is what's
fascinating. Did they just use that to like tell the story?
Right. Here is what is fascinating when we watch some
what's
of these.
Fascinating?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
When we watch documentaries about people, it is fascinating the footage that they have, all the pictures from when they were kids. Tig and I used to always say, okay, I don't think there's one picture of me from the time I was 4 to the time I was 21.
There is no picture of me.
So Michael J. Fox, when he was 16, his teacher said that there was a casting call for a 12-year-old kid. And his teacher said, no, you have an advantage because you're 16, but you'd be able to play a 12-year-old. And
kill it.
And he did. And he killed it.
Yeah.
And then Michael J. Fox decided he wanted to go to L.A. Mm-hmm. And that was bold. And drop out of high school.
I know. And his dad let him.
Which is so sweet. I don't know that my parents would be like, all right, hop in the car.
I don't know. I mean, I did have a thing where I was living in New York and I was working in every restaurant and I made no money. And I remember an agent saying, I'm opening an agency in Los Angeles. Would you be interested? And then calling my parents. And they said, please go.
Oh.
They're like, please leave New York. We support you. We'll help you.
That's
and that was amazing. Because I thought they were going to say, you got to give this up.
Oh.
Because nothing's happening for you in New York. Like, absolutely nothing.
Well, that's very sweet.
I'm just like Michael J. Fox.
No. You really aren't.
But I mean, I can relate to it.
Well, this is something that I think is interesting.
Okay.
I mean,
please.
I think it's interesting. I could be wrong. But when I worked at Universal Studios in Florida, there was a guy that used to live in the same apartment building as Michael J. Fox. And he was friends are we always going to call him Michael J. Fox? I guess.
No, we call Michael. With Michael.
Michael. With Michael.
Or Mikey.
Nope. Please. Rachel.
Oh, I just like that.
No.
You just said nope.
Nope.
He called himself Mikey. He's like, don't put Mikey in a corner.
Okay. That's not for you.
Okay. But we're not going to call him Mikey. We're going to call him Michael. Okay.
Okay.
How dare you tell me what's nothing? All right. Go ahead.
He lived in the same building as Michael. And he said that Michael did not have a phone. And there was a payphone outside of their apartment building, and he would just hang out in front of the payphone because that was the phone number that he would give people to be able to reach him.
That's crazy and fun.
Sit out there all day and, you know, answer the phone. It's like, wow, that I found it so fascinating.
Yeah,
because
he
says he got an apartment in the slums of Beverly Hills. But I was also thinking, are there slums in Beverly Hills?
Well, back then.
Oh, back then?
You know what I mean? Like when he came out in the 80s, he would have been like early 80s, right? And then if he was living, you know, down near Beverwell and Olympic or something like that, you know what I mean?
I like how specific you are.
I know. You know why? Because I lived on Olympic in Beverwell.
Oh. But it was cute because Michael said that he lived in a studio apartment. And there was one sink.
Mm-hmm. One sink.
And he would wash his dishes in that
dishes
sink.
Dishes in the shower. And also in the shower. That was foul.
That was.
I know. But I had a studio apartment like that where I had a tiny.
Is this in New York?
Entire podcast. I'm just like. I did the same. But that's what, but I think that's actually what we felt like, Cheryl, when we saw him struggling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you and I both lived in just the shittiest apartments.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That we shared with people that we that were not great. They were terrible. I mean, like the one that I lived in, I remember a friend came over that was in the Groundlings with me. And we were writing in my studio apartment. And he said, Rachel, the entire ceiling of your shower is so moldy. Like,
ew.
That should be condemned. And I was like, he's like, doesn't your landlord take care of that? And I was like, I don't know.
When I first moved to LA, I lived with these two other guys. And they were part of a...
I cannot wait. I can't wait what you're going to say.
They would sing like quartet music. And they would be like, Cheryl, can you just sit in this chair while we do our...
Stop it. Was it a cappella group?
Yes. And I would sit there and they'd...
I love a cappella groups, I'm just saying.
And they would sing and they'd show me their...
But I don't.
Routine. And I'd be sitting there in my bathrobe and they're like, you're the girl, the most beautiful girl. And then they'd say, can you stand up and do twirl around? I'm like, oh, guys, you're killing me. All right. Mm-hmm. And then one of them taught voice lessons. So I had a lot of Oklahoma coming at me at 8 in the morning. Anyway, Rachel.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping.
Okay.
Oh, I've sung it all.
Here we go. What?
Okay, so apartment. You had a little apartment.
Okay.
Let's go.
I'm always fascinated at roles that actors didn't get.
Yes.
Ugh.
Isn't that crazy? And are you talking about Back to the Future? Where?
No. I was talking about Ordinary People.
Oh, yeah. And that's one of your favorite movies.
It is, Rachel.
I know. I mean, I love it as well. But isn't it fascinating that he said Robert Redford didn't like his audition very much and was flossing his teeth?
Flossing his teeth during the audition.
During his audition.
That also, we've seen it.
Yeah, we've had all those. Things oh happened to us.
I remember I was auditioning for a SeaWorld commercial in Florida.
Yeah.
And I had a call back. I was feeling really good about it. And And they paired me up with this guy who was clearly high as a kite. And we were supposed to be watching the show. And there was the guy, I don't know if he was a casting director, but he was just running the camera, but he was eating a sandwich. Uh-huh. And He'd say, look over here, the dolphins are jumping, okay. Look over there, you see some whales. And the two of us are just...
laughing so hard.
No, I took it very seriously.
Oh, okay, like, okay.
Whales. But, you know, this guy could not give two shitballs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you had some of those?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've had ones where all I had to do was... I can't remember. It was for like Toys R Us or something like that. And I don't know if you remember, Jeffrey was the giraffe that was like the mascot or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all the audition was that you stand on one side of the room, you walk in, you see Jeffrey and you go, hi, Jeffrey. And you walk out. That was the audition. And you know what?
You did not get it.
I did not get it.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's already bad enough having to audition.
Yeah.
But then when you're auditioning for Robert Redford and he's flossing his teeth.
Yeah, that's tough. That would be soul crushing. That'd be like, wow.
So when he was 22, he was dead broke.
But he still had a chip in a chair.
Which is a poker term.
I loved
term.
That.
Oh,
I loved
term,
that.
You guys.
As long as you have a chip in a chair, you're not out.
That's right. One chip. And he tested for family ties because that's what you do. I mean, at least you used to. I don't know if people still do it. But as an actor, you have a series of auditions. And then if it's a network show, you have to test for it. And it is a lot of pressure. You have to have your deal done.
Yeah, you have to sign a contract looking at what you could make.
What you could make.
If you get this job.
If you get this job. And there are also at least two or three other people that are testing at the same time as you who could also be making... six figures. If they got that job, their life would be different. Yeah. And then you go into the studio and all the network people are there. The studio people are there. Everybody's just eyeballing you.
Yeah.
It's high pressure.
It's insane pressure.
But he killed it. And he got it.
And he got it. Yeah. And then they said they still weren't sure. he said he still had to shoot the pilot and that they could replace him.
Yeah.
Which is the scariest thing in the world. When you first get that job, you're so excited and you shoot the pilot and then you're like.
People do get replaced all the time.
All the time. Happens all the time. It's horrible. It's just.
It's a tough business.
When his agent was telling him that he got that job, he was right by a Pioneer Chicken. And he was, as he was talking to him, he said he wished that he had the $1.99 to buy the chicken wings. That he didn't even have a $1.99 to buy the chicken wings.
Yeah, which I can completely relate to. When I auditioned,
totally relate to.
When I auditioned for Curb, I was running late. And I was like, oh no, I'm not going to be able to find a parking spot. And I just parked somewhere where I shouldn't have parked because I was like, if I get it, I'll be able to pay this parking ticket and it'll be worth it.
Yeah.
And I did. Hey, y'all. Hey, but y'all. Usually I would say, if I get it, I'll be able to pay this parking ticket. And I wouldn't get it. And my car would get booted. You can't move your car for 6 weeks because you don't have enough money to take the boot off.
Yeah.
So. But, so then. Oh. Rachel.
Let's take a break. I know. I was just going to say, I used to say to them, my dog, I'd say, this can mean a doggy door. As I'd leave, I'd always be like, let's hope we can get a doggy door. Like for the dog.
That was your dream? If you got that job, you were going to get a doggy door?
It meant that I could get a house that was big enough to have a doggy door and then he could go out into a yard. Priorities, people.
Rachel.
Priorities.
We have so much to get through and
I know. It's ridiculous.
Okay, we have to take a break. And then we're really, when we come back, we're going to friggin' get ready.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. Okay, so here's what's interesting. So now Michael J. Fox is like a huge hit on Family Ties. Like people cannot get enough of him. And then he finds out that, okay, now we're Back to the Future. Do you want to talk about Back to the Future?
Oh, well, that's amazing because what happens with Back to the Future is that he's doing Family Ties. He's crushing it. Everybody loves him. Brandon Tartikoff was saying before he hired him that he's not the type of guy that would be on a lunchbox. And once the show took off and he was so popular, he then came on a lunchbox and sent it to Brandon Tartikoff and said, hugs and kisses, love Michael J. Fox, which I loved. But he, at that time, he was offered an independent film, I think, or like a smaller, low-budget film, right? Teen Werewolf. Mm-hmm. And he said he was shooting that film when they were on hiatus or like while they were shooting Family Ties. And he was like, they're shooting this big budget film down the street. And he said, and Crispin Glover's shooting it. And I'm so bummed because I want to be. Why aren't, you know, I wish I was on that big budget film. And so then he gets a call from the showrunner of his show to come in and have a meeting. And he says, hey, listen, I have something I have to tell you. I have to confess. When they first sent me, I was sent this film from Steven Spielberg. And at the time, I didn't give it to you, which is weird that they didn't give it to like his agents. Isn't that weird that they didn't give it to his agents or managers?
Well, I guess.
They just gave it to.
Yeah, because he couldn't do it. He was under contract doing this TV show. So they were like, don't even look at it.
Right, but I feel like that's
not okay.
That's no. And so, but at any rate, so the showrunner made the decision, there's no way he's going to be able to do it, to get out to do this film. And then they came back to him. They came back and said, listen, Eric Stoltz is playing this part, but we don't think it's working out. And we're willing to reshoot everything with Michael J. Fox. And so he tells him this. And the next thing he knows, he's shooting Family Ties during the day at 9:30 in the morning until he wraps, and then going and shooting Back to the Future in the evening, and does that for 3 months, I guess. And it's insane.
It's insane. That is crazy. But he was only, what, 20 or something? Oh, no, how old was he? 22. So he must have been around 22, 23.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Crazy.
And then I just want to say one thing about lunchboxes.
Yes.
But it just reminded me of when we were shooting a show. I won't say what show it was.
Okay.
But David Schwimmer was on the show that I was on. And
uh-huh. Okay.
And we were talking, and I was asking him about Friends. And I was like, what was that like? Because, you know, he had said that they had, a lot of them had done different pilots before, different shows, but nothing was really mm-hmm. catching on. And he said that, and then David said, the next thing I know, Friends is a huge hit, and we're on the cover. We're on, like, people's lunchboxes. But it just uh-huh. it just reminded me of that moment, because I thought, oh, is that like every network's dream, is to get their show on lunchboxes?
I think back then that was like another form of social media. You know what I mean? It's like,
I guess so. Like, you've made it if you're on somebody's lunchbox.
Because if one kid in the school has that lunchbox, right?
Yeah.
Then that's like, I want that lunchbox. And then that merch is... That merch is going to sell so fast.
Yeah, it's interesting. But even, you know, when I was talking to David, he said, yeah, they were working so hard on the show. Mm-hmm. You know how it is when you're working. You're just going to the set every day. You work whatever, 12-hour days. You go home, you sleep, you go to the set, you go home, you sleep. And you don't even... He said they didn't even realize...
How huge the show was.
Yeah, yeah. So Michael J. Fox. And then so... In this documentary, it cuts back to Michael J. Fox talking. And it's really hard. You know, it's hard to...
Yes, you're absolutely right. Because you see how in control he is, and how what a wonderful actor he is, and how funny he is, and how quick and fast he is with his wit. And then you cut to him present day, and you see how the Parkinson's has really advanced.
Yeah. He seems like such an amazing person. Even when he's talking about it, he's talking about his face one day, and he said, yeah, I fell and I crushed the bones in my face. So mm-hmm. now I have pins in my face. And that's just part of my life now.
He said that's just part of Parkinson's. Yeah. He's like, you just fall.
Yeah.
And he's never a victim, ever. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. He never once is like, poor me.
No, no. His
not
attitude
one time.
And his spirit and who he is really, and he's very candid, because he says, he even said, you know, I, at some point Davis Guggenheim asked him, because Michael had said, yeah, I was, at that point I was partying, I was pretty mm-hmm. full of myself, mm-hmm. I was doing whatever I wanted, and
yeah, I was kind of being a dick.
Yeah, and he said, yeah, I was a dick.
Yeah, he was arrogant. You know, he got caught up with all of that fame,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You could see, like, they did a cut where he was with...
The showrunner.
With, well, and also with Justine Bateman and Meredith Baxter.
Yeah.
You could see he was saying something. He was like, you know, now that I think about it, we shouldn't even do this part right over here. You know, we've all been in situations where there's an actor that's, like, having a moment and they're having a hard time. And you can see Justine Bateman's eyes go wide, like... Oh boy.
Here we go again. Oh boy.
But what's great is that he, like you said, he was very candid about, like, I was really full of myself.
Yeah.
And he was talking about what happens when you get fame so young.
Yeah.
And how you handle it.
Yeah.
And then enters Tracy.
Tracy Pollan. So Tracy Pollan is an actress, and she was a young actress at the time, and she was cast on Family Ties mm-hmm. as his love interest. And the next thing mm-hmm. you know, they fall in love.
It's kind of great, though, too, because he describes her. He's like, I was just like a funny guy going for laughs. And she was like this serious actress.
Trained. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was like, I don't know why they cast me, you know, but they wanted somebody different.
Yeah.
Than Michael, which is kind of.
And she didn't like put up with his bullshit. She called him out on it. And that's when he fell in love with her.
Yeah.
And then they were cast together in a movie and then they really fell in love. And the next thing you know, Rachel.
They're married.
And have a baby.
And have a baby a month after she got pregnant, a month after they got married.
That's insane. She was 20.
She was 20 when she got pregnant with that baby?
20. Oh, come on. I mean, that's insane.
They were 20?
Well, she was.
Oh, boy.
She was.
She was 20. I know, but I can't. I mean, mm-mm.
I can't.
Wow. Rachel. Wow. I mean, come on.
Come on.
I'm 80 with two children under 7.
And you still feel like, I'm not ready.
Oh, never ready. Always.
Never ready.
Underprepared. And also like, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing. What's happening?
In 1990, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Mm-hmm. And he was in his late 20s. He was in his late 20s. That's so crazy. And he just had a hard time.
Couldn't believe it was happening.
Yeah, so he didn't tell anybody.
No,
he was in denial. Did you get the feeling that he didn't tell Tracy also, or did Tracy know? I couldn't get that.
No, I didn't get that feeling that he didn't tell Tracy.
Okay.
I mean, that's interesting. That would have been a great thing to hear her talk about, you know, like living in that situation, knowing that he had Parkinson's.
Because he was saying he wanted to just keep working. He wanted to be on location, on films. And because then people didn't know that he had Parkinson's and he could act like he didn't. And if people didn't know that he had it, then he felt like he didn't have it.
Wasn't it fascinating how he said if he just kept his left hand busy, that would like sort of work on the tremors in his arms and his hand. And then they cut back to all of these scenes where he has something in his hand.
Yeah. And it's always moving.
And it's always moving. And he always, and you're like, we watched all those films.
I know.
It never took us out of it. We were never like, because when they announced it, when he was on Spin City, it felt like, oh, it just happened.
Yeah. And so he was drinking heavily, and he said he woke up one morning with a really bad hangover, and Tracy asked him, is this what you want? Is this who you want to be?
Who you want to be.
Mm-hmm. And he decided to get sober.
Yeah. Oof. And he's been sober for 30 years.
That's amazing. I mean,
he's fucking amazing.
Yeah. And then he decided to return to television so he could be with his family, he could have better hours. He was, in LA with his family, and he did Spin City. Yeah. And he was shooting Spin City, and his Parkinson's was getting
more. It was progressing.
It was progressing. And he would have to take pills all the time. And he was trying to time them to kick in just the right moments, like right before a big scene. I mean, it all sounds so stressful and
unbelievably stressful. And also, I think for him getting sober during that period, he did say something that I loved, because he was like, once he decided, that he was going to, that he could no longer run from this or that it was exhausting him, he said that it was time to tell the world that I had this disease. And he said, because, you're only as sick as your secrets. Mm-hmm. And that's a big program thing. It's a big program phrase that I say, that everybody that's in program says all the time. You know, it's like, you're only as sick as your secrets. And it's so freeing. It was like great to see him have to stop running.
Yeah.
God, just that image that they kept showing of him running down that blank hallway. Like, just, we've all been there, right? Where you're just like running and running and running as fast as you can to get away from something that's bothering you.
Yeah.
That you don't want to face.
Yeah. And then at the same time, they would cut back to him now and just, watching him really struggle to walk.
In his physical therapy.
Yeah. And you're just, Cheryl. Come on, the therapist.
I mean, come on.
Come on, this Cheryl. Guy. Rachel.
So kind. I know.
Like, you just were like, oh my God, this guy is so amazing. The physical therapist.
And then how about the physical therapist? One of the very first scenes after they say Florida and they show all that. they show him walking with that physical therapist, right?
Yeah.
And they show him walking downstairs and you're like, oh my God. And he's just walking so fast. He walks out onto like Central Park West or I don't know where, somewhere in New York. He's walking and walking and walking. They see a nurse and he says, hello or whatever. And she says, nice to meet you. And then he falls and he loses his shoe. And she picks him, she helps him stand up and he says, nice to meet you or whatever. And then he goes, it was so nice to meet you. And then he just goes, you knocked me off my feet.
Yeah.
Like it was like so funny.
I know.
And that's how the film starts.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God.
What am I in for?
He's a genius. That's like even just joking in that moment to make
someone else feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So Michael J. Fox came out and told people, and it was, you know, a big story. And he was still shooting Spin City.
Yeah.
And then at some point he stopped.
Well, I think what happened was that it got to the point where he couldn't
keep up that.
He couldn't keep up. Yeah. He couldn't do it.
And then Rach.
Yeah.
At some point, Michael J. Fox was on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, he certainly was.
Would you like to hear a clip of that?
I would. I would love
it. Okay, stand by.
It was hilarious.
Can I get you a soda or something?
Oh, sure. That'd be great. Oh, thanks. Oh, Jesus Christ! What the hell? Did you shake that up on purpose?
Parkinson's.
I mean, what's amazing about Larry is he's not afraid to... If somebody wants to be a part of, you know, making fun or being in on the joke, because Larry likes to make fun of everybody and everything, and including himself. And he reached out to Michael J. Fox and asked him, like, do you want to be on the show? And part of the storyline will be that, you know, you have Parkinson's. And so Michael J. Fox did the show. And so that clip where Listen, people don't like Larry on Curb Your Enthusiasm in the show. He gets in fights with everybody. So he's at Michael's house and...
He has a big problem with Larry and so that he...
But then he's like...
Then he blames it on Parkinson.
Yeah, which is the joke. And it's...
So when he opens up the soda pop...
Yeah.
Did I just say soda pop?
You did.
Oh my God.
Hello, 1922.
40s. Yes, they called and went their reference back.
But anyway, so even Michael J. Fox doing Curb was just... telling the world, look, I know.
Yeah.
I get it. It's crazy. And it's happening and I'm part of it and I can make fun. I mean, if you haven't seen, let's just say if you haven't seen this documentary, you should see it. Don't you think you should see it?
Oh, my God.
Michael J. Fox testified to Congress alongside of Muhammad Ali and he founded the Fox Foundation and helped raise nearly $2 billion for Parkinson's. $2 billion.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the story in a nutshell.
Yeah.
It's time for Happily Ever After Thoughts, where we give our final thoughts on this week's documentary.
Yeah.
Did you cry?
I did.
You did?
I did.
When did you cry?
I did right at the very beginning when he fell. And then he got up and he said, hey, you knocked me off my feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
There are a couple times, honestly.
Yeah.
Like when he cries about his dad passing. That killed me. Did you cry?
I did not. I mean, I was moved. I was moved beyond, but I didn't actually cry.
But your eyes didn't well up?
You know what? When he was asked how to describe his wife, Tracy.
Yeah.
And Michael... like took this, you could see in his eyes, like everything he was thinking. And then he said, clarity. I was like, whoa, that was really beautiful. But I didn't cry. Rachel, who were you attracted to?
Who wasn't I attracted to is the better question.
Everybody in that friggin' film.
They're all really beautiful. I think you and I are probably attracted to the same person.
You want to say it together on the count of three?
Yes. Yes.
But remember, you don't take a beat.
Okay. Okay. So we go one. So we're going to do it like this. Like pretend. Yes. We go like this. We go one, two, three. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready? You do it. You count it down.
One, two, three. The therapist.
Physical therapist.
Oh. That's right. I mean, although Michael J. Fox is like adorable.
Well, that's obvious. That's the obvious choice.
Okay. Rachel, that's all for this week's episode. Next week, we'll be talking about Big Vape, The Rise and Fall of Juul on Netflix. Rach, before we go, should we read some true fan mail?
Oh, I would love to.
Oh, no. We've got some fan mail about our Judy Blume Forever episode. Oh, boy. Okay, here we go.
I'm sure we do. Okay.
This is from Jennifer. Great. Okay. I want to thank you for your review of the Judy Blume documentary, which was so moving to me. My mother bought me a set of Judy Blume books when I was around 10 to 12 years old. I read them all many times. Here's my PG-13 moment. I did read Then Again, Maybe I Won't, and was very confused. I didn't understand exactly why the male character feared being called up to the front of the class at certain times when he had an erection in class. That's in parentheses. I understood the gist, but not really the full experience, I guess. Here's my big confession. I wrote Judy a fan letter as a child, though it paled in comparison to the one she described. I'm guessing that I just told her she was wonderful and really got kids my age, etc. I got in return a form letter. I think it's great that Judy took the time to write to the kids who really needed to hear from her. I was pretty happy with my mailing. Oh, that's it. She was happy with the form letter. Sorry. I'm reading this with...
Yeah.
I was pretty happy with my mailing. Thanks again for keeping the show going and keeping Monday mornings cheerful. Okay, so Rach, what Jennifer's saying... I was reading it wrong. I thought
yes.
She... Okay. Judy
didn't personally go back to every single
letter.
She's like, but it didn't make her mad. She was happy with her mail.
Because she got...
Even if it was just a form letter.
Right. But nobody needs to think that she was writing every kid.
Every single kid.
Because that is what I took back. That's what I got from it.
I know. Okay. That's what we thought
Thank
too.
Thank you,
and
Jennifer.
That's what they wanted us to think.
Well, we're not falling
All
for
right.
it. Jennifer knows.
No. Now we know the truth. Thank you, Jennifer. Truth teller.
This is from Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Hey, Kim.
Hey. Hi, Kim.
Love Judy Blume Forever and loving the chemistry with Cheryl and Rachel. Keep the laughs coming. I read and learned from Judy Blume books as a kid. And yeah, it was like contraband, even though the schools didn't treat it as such. Now I'm a parent with teen boys, and I recommend they watch a Netflix show called Sex Education. Its messages are delivered with real modern situations and models healthy forms of communication. Oh, I've heard about Sex Education.
I started watching it. I remember
what
a
happened?
While ago. I think my
children. You were like, I know all this.
Yeah, Cheryl. I just was like, don't school me.
Don't school.
I know. I've
done it.
I've
seen it.
Listen,
done it. I wrote.
Listen,
it.
I was active sexually late in life, so
and the guy
so
fell asleep.
Exactly. The first guy I was with fell asleep.
Okay. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Let's not even.
You guys, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at truestoryfanmail@gmail.com. And we might just read your little email on air because we love you guys. On the air.
Even though we're not like on the air.
We're on
we're
the
like,
air. We're in the
we're
air.
On the,
we're in the
we're
air.
In,
we're
on
in your
computer.
We're
or the
in your
phone,
earballs.
On your phone. Wow.
Yeah. We love reading your messages, comments, reviews. Hopefully they're good ones. Keep letting us know what you think about the docs and leave us a review. And we might just read your response on the show. Rach, do you have anything to promote?
No. And you know what? When this comes out, it will have already happened. Just the fan convention that's coming out.
Okay.
That I'm going to this week. I hope everybody had a good time that went to it.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did, Rachel. I'm sure the key party was successful.
So successful. And did you do you have anything to talk about? Any updates on Heinz and Young?
Well, you know, I love my Heinz and Young. So if you go to Shop Heinz Young, you can see all of our beautiful products that will help you relax and get through life in one piece and peace of mind. All right, Rach, that's going to do it. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you guys so much for listening.
We'll call you tonight.
We'll call you tonight.
True Story is hosted by me, Cheryl Hines, and Rachel Harris. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, audio engineered and edited by Thomas Ouellette, with production assistance from Nadia Labetz. Special thanks to Gabby Kovacic, Patrick McDonald, and Stephanie Allen. Follow us on social media for updates and review and rate True Story wherever you get your podcasts. You can email us at truestoryfanmail@gmail.com.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.